Tonight we'd like to turn to the book of Daniel, chapter 11, book of Daniel, chapter 11. Before we read our text, the book of Daniel opens with a statement of historical fact concerning Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, conquering Judah. And that statement establishes the historical background of the book. But behind the historical background is a very important spiritual truth. We see that in verse 2 of chapter 1, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. So God was behind it all with part of the vessels of the house of God. That spiritual truth really establishes the theme of the book, which is the absolute sovereignty of God. In the book of Daniel, 13 times he is declared to be the Most High. That's sovereignty. Two times he's the God of gods. Again, that's sovereignty. He is declared to be the Lord of the kings, the King of heaven, and the great God, all in the book of Daniel. And throughout the book, we see that God sets up nations, brings down kings, brings down nations. He did so with Babylon. The message concerning God in the book of Daniel is that God is still on the throne. And that's something that we need to know at all times. The stage of the book is godless Babylon. So the theme, we have God on the throne. And then we have godless Babylon. And then the overall scene is a group of God's people living in the godless society and culture of Babylon. And the book of Daniel sets before us four of these individuals. There were thousands and thousands, but the book of Daniel sets before us four that had been exiled to Babylon and were living in Babylonian captivity. Those four, of course, are mentioned. Chapter 1, verse 6, you have Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. There were others who were faithful to God that are not mentioned in the book of Daniel. Ezekiel would have been one. Ezekiel, of course, preached in Babylon, so he was one who was carried into captivity. But the book does specifically mention these four individuals, with the primary focus being upon Daniel, as far as the four individuals are concerned. I'd like to read Daniel 11, verse 32. And as such as do wickedly against the covenant, shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. So in this verse, we have amongst the captives two groups of people. There are those who would prove to be unfaithful to God. It says that they do wickedly against the covenant. And as such, they shall be corrupt. That is, ungodly and unholy and profane. And the way this comes about is by flatteries, by the lies and deceits of Babylon. In our case, the lies and deceits of the world. And then there's another group, a group that knows God. In between these two groups of people, we find the conjunction but. That's what divides these two people, these two groups. And then we have the second group mentioned following the word but, the people that do know. The people that do know. That is, they have a spiritual knowledge of God. They have a knowledge of communion with God. Those who know their God, these individuals, it is said that they shall be strong. That is, they will not be drawn, unlike the first group, from him by the lies and the deceits of Babylon. They will be strong and they will do exploits. That is, they will perform bold acts. They will have great spiritual achievements and attainments. And these four individuals, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are living illustrations of this statement. They that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. These four individuals never became entangled in the web of Babylon. They never did. And there were others as well, as we've already said. But these are individuals that never became entangled in the web of Babylon. It is sad today when someone lives a pretty faithful life, and then in their older years they get entangled in the web of Babylon. That's very sad. It's sad when anyone gets entangled in the web of Babylon. But these individuals, they were established in God even while in Babylon. And as you look at these individuals, they didn't just survive. They didn't just get through Babylon. They thrived in Babylon. They flourished spiritually in Babylon. They blossomed even in Babylon. And we as God's people must not set our sights merely on surviving, merely on getting through Babylon. That's not what we're here for. We're not here to just merely get through. We're here to thrive spiritually, even in Babylon. And it's possible. And we get there by knowing God. That's what Daniel 11, verse 32 tells us. That's how we get there. That's how we thrive in Babylon. We have to know God. So I want to speak tonight on knowing God in a society and culture that does not. Our society does not know God. Our culture does not know God. Not only do they not know God, they have no interest in knowing the Lord. So let's look briefly at the circumstances in which these individuals lived. We covered it pretty much this morning. They lived in Babylon, and again, though Babylon was a country, a nation, in the Bible it's much more than a nation. It represents a system. A system of paganism, a system of secularism, a system of evil. And it's represented that way all through the Scriptures. As we said this morning, it's a fountain of many types of abominations. So it serves as a very apt picture of the world. It serves as a very apt picture of the godless and anti-God philosophies and attitudes of the world. But for example, in the book of Revelation, during the tribulation period, there's a commercial Babylon and there is a religious Babylon. But they both represent a system of evil. They both represent the system of Antichrist. At that time, it will be the spirit of the Antichrist. But Babylon today represents the spirit of Antichrist, which is the spirit that goes through our world. So these Hebrew captives, they're in a place, they're among a people, where the thoughts and the views are polar opposite to their own. They can finally find anything to agree on. And everywhere these captives turn, there's heathen worship. There's heathen images, heathen talk, heathen ways, heathen philosophies. Everywhere they turn, they're bumping in to these things. And there's an all-out effort to bring them into conformity to this system, of Babylon, to reshape their thinking, to reshape their viewpoint, to mold them into the mindset of Babylon. So these Hebrews that were taken captive are constantly exposed to the ways of Babylon. And so it is today. We are constantly exposed to the ways of Babylon. But the older we get, and the more we're exposed to the ways of Babylon, I believe what I'm about to say is true of many here tonight, we are more turned off by Babylon than tempted to go in that direction. It doesn't mean that we can't, but the more we learn Babylon, the longer we live in this life, Babylon doesn't have a whole lot of influence. We don't have many desires for Babylon. But it still makes it a very trying time to always be bombarded with the ways of Babylon, to see others fall to the ways of Babylon. That's a very trying and difficult time. It's a very dangerous time. It's a very threatening time, because we must realize without Him, we could fall into that web at any time. And we must be aware of that. But these individuals in Babylon stood for God. They showed forth God in their lives. And God has always had a remnant. God has always had a people that have stood in Babylon, that have shined for God, that have lived for the glory of God. And those are the people we want to focus upon this evening. In our text, they're identified as those who know God. They know God. That's the key. Now that tells us, that presents to us a blessed truth. That is, God can be known. They that know their God. So, there's these others, this other group, who will be corrupted by the flatteries of Babylon. They may be our own parents, they may be our children, they may be our grandchildren, they may be people we love dearly, and they are corrupted by the flatteries of Babylon. Be careful when Babylon starts flattering you. There's a design behind it. Be careful. But in the contrast, we see there's these people who do know their God. Again, God can be known by man. What a wonderful, wonderful truth. In Psalm 9, verse 10, they that know thy name. His name in Scripture represents everything that He is. Jesus said in John 17:3, and this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. That they might know thee. We read in 1 John 4:6, he that knoweth God and in 1 John 5, verse 20, that we may know Him that is true. So the God whom the heaven and heavens of heavens cannot contain can be known by man. The God who heaven is His throne, the earth is His footstool, that God can be known by man. That's a truth that needs to grip our hearts. I can know God. I can know God. And it's if we're going to stand in Babylon, it's absolutely imperative that we do know Him. They that know their God shall be strong and do exploits. We read in Hosea 6, verse 3, then shall we know if we follow on to know the Lord. It ought to be our endeavor every day to know God. Never to be satisfied with what we know of God right now, but always wanting to know Him more. Job 22, verse 21, we read, acquaint now, whatever the now is, acquaint now thyself, that's personal, with Him. And the result, be at peace. Acquaint yourself with God, and you'll have peace. So God can be known. I can know Him. And I need to pursue to know Him. But what does this mean? They that know their God. What does it mean? There's a lot of people who would claim to know God, but they don't. What does it mean to know God? Well, to have knowledge means that you possess an understanding. So it would include understanding. It means you recognize something. So to know God is to have an understanding. It is to have a recognition. To know something is to comprehend. So it would be to have a comprehension, some sort of grasp on God, to know God. So it's to have some understanding of who God is, who He is. Some understanding of and comprehension of what He does, to know God. To know God is to recognize God in our lives. You know somebody, you recognize them. To know God means that we recognize Him in our lives. Now, when the Bible speaks of knowing God, it of course speaks of something much more than knowing about God. Anyone who's attended Sunday school or church for any length of time knows some things about God. But knowing about God and knowing God are two entirely different things. So this is something more than an intellectual knowledge. It is something more than a religious knowledge of God. People have all kinds of theories about God. This knowledge is more than a theory. There are people who know some truths about God. But this knowledge is more than doctrine about God. You see, because all of those things that we just mentioned can leave you detached from the Lord. You can know about God and be detached from God. You can be sound theologically about God, but be detached from God. Be indifferent toward God. And any so-called knowledge of God that leaves you detached or indifferent is not the kind of knowledge that the Bible is speaking about. So this is a knowledge that attaches us to God, doesn't leave us detached. Now, when the Bible speaks about knowing God, it's referring to confidence. You know who God is, and you know what God does. That gives you confidence in God. You spend time with God, you gain confidence in God. It's just like with people. You spend time with people in difficult situations and you gain confidence in those people. It is assurance. It is persuasion. It is conviction. This knowledge of God is a conviction of who God is. Babylon cannot overthrow a conviction. Babylon can overthrow mere intellectual knowledge and knowing about God. But Babylon cannot overthrow deep-seated conviction in who God is. It's certainty concerning who God is. Whatever you know of God, you need to be certain about it. We all have different degrees of knowledge concerning God. But whatever it is you know, be certain. Don't have any doubt whatsoever. Be certain. Babylon can't overthrow that. It's a certainty concerning who God is. We need to hear Psalm 46 and 10. We've preached on this. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Psalm 100 and verse 3. Know ye that the Lord, He is God. In both of those statements, it's not merely said, know God. That's not what it said. It says, know that I am God. Know that the Lord, He is God. It's a confidence, it's an assurance, it's a conviction, it's a certainty concerning His greatness, His vastness, His majesty, His glory, His power, His wisdom, His love, His mercy, His long-suffering, His care. And on we can go. It is a certainty. It is a deep-seated conviction that He is our shepherd, He's our helper, He's our fortress, He's our refuge. And we know this by experience. It is a knowledge that comes from instruction, but it is also a knowledge that comes from personal experience. It is a knowledge that comes from close association and contact and friendship and kinship with God. It's a knowledge that comes from conversing with God and confiding in God and drawing close to God. This is the knowledge that is spoken of in our text. Now I want you to notice that this knowledge consists of a personal connection to God. As you follow these four men in the book of Daniel, you see that they were connected. They were linked in heart to God. They were fixed and they were firmly established in the Lord. This fact is seen throughout the book. It was often declared, and it was recognized by the Babylonians themselves, that these men had a connection to God. We see Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah in Daniel 3, verse 17, under the threat of being cast into the burning fiery furnace for not bowing, they said, our God, there's a connection, our God, whom we serve. They boldly declared their connection to God. Don't ever be ashamed of knowing God. Openly declare, my God, my God. The world will say, well, my God wouldn't send anybody to hell. Yours might not, but mine will. So there's an association between them and God. And after they were cast into the furnace for noncompliance, and miraculously sustained by God, Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 3 verse 28 declared concerning them that they did not serve nor worship any god except their own God. So even Nebuchadnezzar recognized that there's a connection between these men and God. Daniel 6 verse 5, the men who were trying to entrap Daniel made reference to the law of his God. Again, even the Babylonians recognize these men have a connection to God. In Daniel 6, verses 10 and 11, Daniel is praying, and it says he's praying before his God. And in Daniel 6, verse 16, the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Thy God." Again, it was recognized that these men had a connection to God. Daniel 6, verse 22. Daniel declared before Darius, "My God." And we read concerning Daniel, he believed in his God. And in Daniel 6, verse 26, Darius made reference to the God of Daniel. Again, even enemies could see that there was a connection between these people and God. In Daniel chapter 9, verse 4, Daniel spoke of the Lord, "My God." In our text, the people that do know their God, there's a connection. So these men who spiritually thrived in Babylon had a different connection than those in Babylon. They had a different root system than those of Babylon. They had a different connection and different root system than the first group of people mentioned here in Daniel 11, verse 32. They had a knowledge that connected them to God, caused them to be identified with God. They also had a personal conviction concerning God. Notice in Daniel chapter 2 what Daniel declares concerning God. Daniel 2, verse 20. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His. For He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with Him." That was his conviction concerning God. He had a deep-seated conviction. He said to Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 2, verse 28, "But there is a God in heaven." He declared that truth to Nebuchadnezzar. He did so with great conviction. He did not do so in an apologetic manner. He just simply declared the truth to Nebuchadnezzar. There is a God in heaven. Daniel 2, verse 37. He declares the same thing, the God of heaven. In Daniel 3, verse 17, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, while being threatened with their lives by Nebuchadnezzar, said, "Our God whom we serve is able." They were convicted about that. They had a conviction. They had a certainty. Daniel chapter 5, verse 18, Daniel before wicked Belshazzar, the king, referred to the Most High God. He's declaring the sovereignty of the Lord. Daniel 5, verse 21, he said, "The Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and He appointed over it whomsoever He will." He declared the sovereignty of God with great conviction. They also noticeably lived their lives under God. If you know God, you have a conviction concerning His person and all the classes of Babylon aren't going to change that conviction. That's why it is of the utmost importance If young people are going to go to state universities, they'd better have convictions. They've got to have convictions. It's absolutely imperative. They can't have mom and dad's convictions. They have to have their own personal convictions. And if they don't, they're not ready. Plain and simple. God was not merely a subject of conversation to these individuals. He was a living reality in their lives. In other words, they were God conscious. In chapter 2, verse 19, we read that Daniel blessed the God of heaven. In Daniel 2, verse 23, he said, "I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers." God was real to Daniel. In chapter 3, you have Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they're seen trusting and leaning entirely upon God, serving and worshiping God in the midst of a very threatening situation. And Nebuchadnezzar, in chapter 3, verse 28, in referring to them, said they, again, not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Even others, even Nebuchadnezzar recognized that God was a central part in these individuals' lives. They who know God, that's always so. And again, this was at a time when the masses were bowing and worshiping a Babylonian idol. And then in chapter 6, when it was against the law to pray, what did Daniel do? He continued his habit of prayer. He continued like he always did. The law meant nothing. And Darius said concerning him that he served God continually, even when they made it against the law. He served God continually. And people today will, well, you know, it's against the law. That has nothing to do with you when it comes to God. Nothing. The law does not mandate our worship to the Lord. The laws of the land do not have authority over God. We obey the laws of the land as long as it does not conflict with what God has said. But if it conflicts with what God has said, God's law trumps man's law. That's always the case. In chapter 9, nearly 70 years into the captivity, Daniel's still looking toward God. That's what people do when they know God. 70 years into the captivity, and there he is, still looking to God, still praying, still seeking God, still fellowshipping with God, still desiring that everything be done for the honor and the glory of God. So these men, knowing God, living in a corrupt society amid all of its allurements and enticements, they maintained a connection to God. They maintained convictions concerning God. And I believe their convictions became stronger. And that's how it ought to be with us. Our convictions, the longer we live in Babylon, the stronger our convictions ought to become. We ought to not ever waver in our convictions concerning truth. So God was a manifest part in their daily life. And nothing in Babylon could change that. No matter what Nebuchadnezzar tried. Threats, the loss of their life, nothing could change their conviction. That's what it is to know God. And that is what is necessary to thrive in Babylon. So consider the overall impact of this knowledge. The people that do know their God shall. That speaks of an effect. This knowledge of God will have an effect upon them. If what you know about God has no effect upon how you live your life, you don't have the knowledge we're talking about. They that do know their God shall. And it says they shall be. That is, it's going to have an effect on their state of being. What that means is it has an effect upon who they are. Not just on what they do, but it has an effect upon who they are. And who they are is strong. They shall be strong. They shall be secure. They shall be well protected. And do. They shall be and do. Again, all through the Scriptures, the order is the same. Being comes before doing. We get that backwards. They shall be strong and do. So it not only has an effect upon their being, it has an effect upon their activity. It has an effect upon what they do. And what is it that they will do? They will do exploits. They'll do things that mystifies the world. They'll do that which is beyond usual to the world. Because they haven't been identified. They have not allowed Babylon to identify who they are. Their knowledge of God identifies them. So this knowledge into who God is and the ways of God is a transforming power. It transforms us. It enables us to do exploits. Psalm 9 verse 10 says, "And they that know thy name will put their trust in thee." You see, this knowledge of God leads us to do something. Has an effect upon us. So you take these men, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, they lived because they knew God. They lived counter to culture. And they openly and shamelessly served God. And they stood steadfast for God. And they did so in the midst of a God-despising society. They did so in a society that was very hostile. And these men, because they knew God, they stayed clean in the midst of corruption. They stayed clean in the midst of a depraved and degenerate and profane and reprobate society. These men were able to stay clean because they knew God. Because they knew God. These men possessed faith. And they lived their faith in the midst of unbelief. And they were able to do this because they knew God. These men maintained godly conviction. These are the exploits that they did. They maintained godly conviction in the midst of instability. We live in a world that is trying to undo everything that the Bible says. Trying to undo all the history of the founding of this country. And most in our world are victim to that. Most who profess to be saved go along with a lot of the evil of Babylon. But there's always a remnant. There's always a small group of God's people who maintain godly conviction in the midst of instability. That's an exploit. And they're able to do this because of their knowledge of God. These men maintained a strict adherence to truth in a society and culture that did not know anything about truth. In fact, that was filled with heresy and blasphemy. These men remained fervent. And if you look at Daniel and the three other Hebrews, they were militant for God. They really were. They didn't just sit back. They were militant for God in the midst of opposition, in the midst of a society that contradicts everything that God says. They were militant for God because of this knowledge that they had. And they boldly and courageously stood, lived undeniably for God. That's exploits. They that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. They lived above the norm. One of the saddest things you will see is a child of God living the normal life of the world. I mean, it's sad enough to see a lost person stuck in the norm of the world. But when someone who is saved falls into that trap and lives their life in that norm, it's terribly sad. And there were many of these captives who got caught up in Babylon. And when the captivity was over and some 50,000 returned to Jerusalem, that's a very small number over a 70-year period of time. How many people were there? I don't know, but it was more than 50,000. But only 50,000 returned. That was the remnant. That was the remnant. They maintained commitment and devotion and loyalty to God in the midst of an enemy, in the midst of barriers, in the midst of difficulties and troubles, in the midst of problems and hardships and trials. So for all of these people who use their circumstances for the reason they're not where they ought to be with God, that's baloney. There's no truth to it whatsoever. Because we can go to almost every page of Scripture and show you individuals who served God despite, in spite of their circumstances. Perhaps the greatest example was Joseph. Circumstances do not have to be perfect or even favorable for you and I to serve God. What is necessary for you and I to serve God is we must know Him. We must know Him. And these men knew God. And they lived God-evident lives. So all that we would be a people who know God in the midst of a society that does not know. Our neighbors, for the most part, the people we associate with through the day, many of them know not God, but we do. And we're to manifest Him, and we're to declare God unto them. And we're not to be bashful about declaring who God is. That's what we're here for. And the more we know God, the deeper that knowledge goes, the deeper that relationship goes, the more we're able to manifest God in our lives. So again, there's two groups of people here in Daniel chapter 11, verse 32. We all know people that identify with that first group. They've been corrupted by the flatteries of Babylon. But we also know people that do know their God. And they've been strong. And they will continue to be strong. And they do exploits. Exploits is just what's beyond usual in our society. You do the right thing, that's an exploit. Doing the right thing is pretty unusual in our society. Don't ever let society become your standard of measurement and how you react or how you act or how you think. Babylon is never to become our standard. We're to do exploits. And we ought to thank the Lord for everyone who knows God. There's several here tonight. You know God. Perhaps most here tonight know the Lord. I'm not just talking about salvation, but really, truly know God. And those individuals will continue to stand. They will stand. God always has that remnant. Oh, to be a part of that remnant. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.